Hello, this is Chris O'Regan, and you're listening to The Sausage Factory. This is episode 485 of The Sausage Factory. In this episode, I interview Matthew Rathael and Brad Ostrin of Graphite Lab about the design and development of Quomp 2, an arcade puzzle game that is controlled using only two buttons. Actually, thinking about it, it's more like only one, because the other button is you just basically change, like you kind of use it as a boost, really. But yeah, there's a little ball, it's a 2D platform game, little ball is constantly moving. Constantly moving, and anything you can do is change its direction just by pressing a button. It just changes it by about 90 degrees or so, changes the direction and goes off somewhere else. Extraordinary stuff, because you know, less is more is an axiom in video game design, is often cited, and sometimes people really lean into the less way more than normal, and sometimes they can go horribly wrong, but not in this case. Quomp 2 is an exceptional game, really, really inventive and beautifully presented and created, which is why it's on the Sausage Factory. So let's listen to me from the relatively recent past talk to Brad and Matthew about the creation of Quomp 2. Chris, take it away. Hello, Brad and Matt.
Hello.
Hey, Chris.
Now, listeners of episode 464 may recognise Matt's voice, for he has been on before. Yes, when we discussed Mr. Run and Jump. However, Brad is rather fresh and new, because he's here to talk about Quomp 2. So, these first questions in the first half of the show, mainly directed at Brad. Although Matt can chip in if he wants to. Maybe things have changed. Certainly what he's been playing, that's the last question, so we can chip in at the end there. But anyway, so here we go. Between you, though, could you tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm Brad Ostrin, the lead designer behind Quomp 2. And outside of Graphite Lab, you know, I'm a big fan of video games, play lots of them, study them. I run a social media account dedicated to preserving obscure and unknown games. I'm really all over the place, you know, with games. So it's really my passion. And I have multiple, you know, tracks that I kind of handle and oversee.
Okay. Matt, can you just remind us what your role is in Graphite Labs?
Sure. I'm Matt Rathel. I'm the studio director of Graphite Lab, acting kind of as an executive producer on Quomp 2.
Yeah. So, Brad, this is directly aimed directly at yourself, but how did you make your start making video games?
Oh, that's a good question. So, of course, you know, growing up, I was playing a lot of games. And like, you know, as a kid, it's like, whoa, you know, this is super cool. And I continued to play more and more titles. And then as I got older, you know, you start thinking about like career and stuff. And late high school, that's when I kind of started thinking about that path. And I started to think like, I want to make movies. I really like movies, storytelling. So I wanted to be like a film director. And I thought about like making games. But, you know, there's always been stigmas there. Like, oh, you know, games equals programming and programming is challenging. So I was kind of like, I don't know if I want to do that because that sounds tricky. But I kind of nervously like pursued it anyway, because I was like, no, because, you know, I'm really, really passionate about games. You know, kind of my idea at the point was like, OK, I'll break in with programming because I have like the head of like a movie director. I wanted to kind of think less about like gameplay because I was so nervous about programming. And to be honest, I was kind of thinking about like storytelling and cutscenes more so, and I was kind of pretentious. I'm glad I'm past that stage, but yeah, so I you know, pursued it. And really it was before college I discovered Nier, which I'm not sure if you've heard of, but it released in 2010, and it really opened a third eye, you know, so to speak, on the potential that games could offer as a medium. You know, I went into it thinking like a film director, thinking like, oh, you know, storytelling equals cutscenes in games. But playing Nier really showed me like the mechanics and the things in a game can actually contribute so very well, you know, in a unique way. and like tying it together with the story can present itself in a way that no other medium could. So that was really my full speed ahead. Like, I know what I want to do. And Nier was kind of that beacon that got me in.
Okay. No, I can see that. It's an extraordinary pair of games because there was a sequel and then there's other in the Automata, and it went in all sorts of strange and weird and wonderful places. I can definitely see that. But we're not here to talk about Nier. That's an episode of Kane and Rince. I believe does exist. But this next question is related to the one previous. But as a creator, and Matt, you can chip in with this one maybe and sort of embellish a little bit. But as creators, the pair of you, what do you believe are your biggest influences?
Ooh, that's a very tough one. You know, I dabble in so many games, and I touch such a like wide pool of them. I'm sure there's a million influences, but I can kind of name things, you know, as they appear in my head. And I'll cut myself off, of course. So yeah, Nier, you know, I already mentioned it. That's really my first answer. Like, if someone made me say just one, that's where I would go. I'm also hugely inspired by the Trails series, if you've heard of that. That's Falcom's like kind of flagship RPG series. I love Shu Takumi's works, who does Ace Attorney and Ghost Trick. The Soccer War series, not as well known in America, but that's another big one. Hironobu Sakaguchi. He's great, you know, the Final Fantasy creator, some of his spinoffs like Fantasian, and Tetsuya Takahashi is another one who does the Xeno series. So like Xenoblade, Xenosaga, Xenogears.
Right. Okay. Well, not an answer I was expecting considering the type of game Quomp 2 is, but we'll delve into how you managed to do that sure. as much as you'd like. But yeah. Okay. Matt, do you want to embellish a little bit more or do you want to like,
well, I'll just point out that, like, you know, Brad and I both do, you know, have our own inspirations. But a lot of times, like, Quomp 2 is a good example. Like, we're kind of carrying a vision forward. So certain parts of our inspirations can show through. But, you know, the work that we do as designers is so, you know, multifaceted and gets applied in so many different ways that a lot of times we have to adapt those references in ways that you might not readily see. So making something really satisfying, animated really well, very clear user experience. These are things that we'll glean from those inspirational titles and have them show up in a game like Quomp 2, even if they're not immediately obvious. So yeah, a lot of versatility required to kind of bring a game like Quomp 2 forward or any other work for hire collaborative effort.
Yep. And to piggyback off of that a little bit, you know, I can loosely say like that focus of like marrying storytelling and gameplay is kind of pervasive in a lot of the things that I really like. So I took that forward with Quomp, which, you know, tells a wordless story and it uses obstacles and mechanics and, you know, player control to kind of do the heavy lifting on that front.
Okay. Yeah, I can definitely see that. And we're definitely going to expand on that in the second half of the show. But before we do, you need to find out who do you take cues from? Can you tell us what video game developer do you admire most and why?
These are good questions. I'll pick one who's still active because I think the inactive ones, you know, that's like its own like pool. I'm going to go with Nihon Falcom, who is the developer behind the Trails series and East, if you've heard of those, and a lot of those older RPGs that kind of, you know, grandfathered the genre. But in my opinion, like they continue to deliver like really strong, well-rounded packages and on a yearly basis too. You know, their games have great gameplay, storytelling, music, character, and really, like, if they announce a game, like, I'm there. Like, there is never a Falcom game that releases that I'm like, I'm not interested. Like, I trust them, and the quality, you know, it's there every year, in my opinion.
Yes, and they dove into the PS5 very, very early, didn't they? People don't realize this, but they were there very, very soon after it appeared.
Oh, yeah.
When
yeah,
about three people owned one.
Totally, and they're not, like, indie, you know? They've been around for so long, but you know, they're maybe comparable to Atari size. You know, they're like 20 to 30 kind of developers who continue pushing the RPG genre in their own way.
Yeah, and that's a genre that's exploded on all fronts. thanks, Larian. Anyway, you've got to mention them, because when you say that, like, you can't not. Sorry, not going to detract from anyone else. Last question for this first half for you. And again, both Brad and Matt can answer this one because it changes over time. It's one of the few parts of the show which is time dependent. And this last question is this: what are you playing right now?
So right now I'm playing Another Code Recollection, which is that remake of the Another Code series that just came out on Switch. And so far, you know, I'm still making my way through it, but I think generally it's an excellent remake. Like, the original game was so dependent on like the DS hardware. Like, it had, you know, touch screen puzzles, puzzles that used the, you know, the two screens. There was even a puzzle that like made you shut your DS, you know, to solve it. And they really like thought about the game from the top and adapted it, you know, to new technology, because like it uses gyro and analog sticks and a lot of things that weren't on the DS kind of carries that spirit forward. And I really appreciate that they didn't, you know, they could have easily done something easy, you know, to do that. But you can tell they really put a lot of thought in recreating it.
Yeah. Matt, what are you distracting yourself with at the moment?
So I hope this isn't the answer I gave on the last show. A 1996 release called Heroes of Might and Magic 2. It's a franchise that Ubisoft owns, and it was the first that got me into turn-based kind of adventure strategy. And, you know, similar to, I think it's Age of Wonders maybe that just had a new version come out in this type of genre. But I never completed it when I was younger, and I'm kind of in a mode of my life now where I'm trying to play these old, you know, these games from, we'll say, childhood or adolescence that I maybe never finished or never pushed through, or maybe they were too hard then, but I must be a more intelligent guy now, and I'm pushing through those. So Heroes of Might and Magic, New World Computing and 3DO, and now that franchise is carried forward by Ubisoft.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen streamers go, let's play Wizardry 2. Why?
Yeah.
Why? And off they go.
Know, I, it just captured me. I had one of those. I get these moments where I'm like, ooh, I have to play that today right now. And sometimes it'll be short-lived. You and your listeners might experience this. I play for 30 minutes and okay, that's enough. I put it away for another couple of years. And I have gone through two core campaigns and all four expansion campaigns. And I am on the last map of the last campaign. And then I can put it away for a while.
Hmm. Yes, indeed. I know people who have delved back into From Software's back catalogue and discovers Kingsfield. What's this? And that's an experience. But
sure,
we could go on and on, everyone, but we can't, because we've got something way more, not interesting, that's not fair, but just as exciting and forward-thinking and very thought-provoking what Quomp 2 is. It really is, everyone. It asks a lot of questions, but... constantly of the player, and we're going to delve into this. So, second half of the show, let's move on and talk about Quomp 2. So, Brad, I'm going to push this onto you, Brad, because, you know, apparently this is something you've been ploughing your heart and soul into, but with a good cajoling from Matt on the sidelines going, you go, do the thing.
Yes.
But in your own words, I wish you the very best of luck with this, but could you tell us, what is Quomp 2?
So Quomp 2 is the sequel to 2021's indie darling Quomp, which people may or may not be familiar with. It was a minimalist puzzle game about freedom, you know, and that was the description for that one, a game about freedom. Players took control of a ball, and it was a ball in the game of Pong, and you basically just guide it to its eventual freedom. And in this entry, you know, it's kind of similar. Players take control of another ball that's fallen victim to, you know, similar circumstances, but this time the ball takes on a new shape, so it's circular, has new abilities and, you know, its own challenges to overcome on the way. So I like to think, like, whereas Quomp 1 is a game about freedom, Quomp 2 is a game about identity.
Yes, and you do take the role of a ball, which does bounce around a arena, a space, the player's control is limited. Which really delves into what I'm going to be asking you first, in that there are only two ways of controlling the ball. Essentially, it's, well, you can change the direction of the ball as it's traveling by simply adding a jump or a bounce, I should say, trying to describe it to the listener because it's really hard until you play it. But it essentially is controlled by two buttons alone. That's it. You know, I've actually got a track and field controller because I'm really old for an Atari machine. And it's just got three buttons, start and then the other two either side. That's it. And so you could wire it and play Quomp with it. It's great. Sure. So all those, I think it's 17 buttons on a modern joypad. I think it's something like that. If you think about all the combinations, it's in a region of that. Sure. It's in his teens.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Which is why when non-gamers see a controller, they run away because it's like, what is this? Like, yeah. Whereas point being, so the other thing you can do with this is you can make it go much, much faster, just like a burst. And I've found myself basically hanging on to that button for dear life because that's how you bounce around. And then when you get that burst, it adds just that little bit more of control. But what I find fascinating is when you're designing the levels, how have you found knowing that the control, that the limits of the control of the player have and how they traverse through the space? What have you done to the level design to ensure that they have a chance, Brad? Because there's a lot of hazards, everyone. Spiky things.
Yep. Spiky things.
Transportations. Other things, it gets crazy. But anyway, we'll later.
Yeah. And, it was one of my jobs, of course, to make sure it played comfortably. And, spacing is really key in that kind of situation. And in the early days of, designing, because of the situations in a Pong or a breakout style game, it's very easy to rebound off of a wall and you kind of reflect, in a way that you didn't really anticipate. So, I kind of any blocks or spikes or hazards, there's enough space to where you should be able to safely pull off a dash and not have to worry about crashing, kind of a thing. So the design team was very cautious about making sure that there are none of those cheap deaths. So you could always really charge up your dash and kind of handle the situation. Of course, there might be the player who charges a dash in front of spikes and there's nothing we can do about that because you're moving forward and you're a bit out of luck, but hey, that's okay. There's no lives. Respawn and try again. But yeah.
There's a sense of panic when you let go of the charge because I just have it on. Because I'm on the right trigger and go, okay, now, oh, I've lost control. But, did you ever have any control? The fact that you're pressing the A button, or because I've played this, everyone, on my Steam Deck exclusively. Quomp 2 works exceptionally well. And it's just basically me hanging on and then just on the right-hand side of my Steam Deck, just keep on and then just feather. I call it feathering, pressing the A and bouncing a horizontal line. It's my way of describing it, calling it feathering. So it's just like you're gently allowing yourself the faint hope of actual control. In reality, it's...
Yeah. And we actually, so you might have noticed it. It's kind of an advanced tech thing, but when you're charging your dash, your ball actually gets a little slower.
Yeah.
So more advanced players might be able to learn to take advantage of that, slow down to kind of re-steer themselves. And we do have I call it the magnet, but it looks like a wormhole, but that allows you to kind of dock and stop and think, a lot. And that we place those in a lot of rooms too, to kind of, cause there's rooms especially in the first one where it's I keep dying. I want to think about it, but I can't stop moving. Right. So it's just going to keep going to die. So it gets you, that opportunity to think. So we kind of offer lots of different things for a game where you can't stop moving forward, basically.
Yeah, you just keep moving. But just keep moving. Stopping for a breath is important, especially in the sense of escalation, because Quomp 2, everyone, starts off very gently. But I think the curve, if you want to call it a curve, it's a bit maths-like, but it starts off very shallow, but not very shallow for very long, because very, very quickly it ramps up. Now, I just want to... I know when that turning point is and there's multiple worlds and levels, but I think it's after my personal view, it's like a fourth level or fifth, things get really interesting because the inanimate objects start moving, the things you've got to smash through start moving, then the collectibles become even more complicated and difficult to get to because there are collectibles, everyone. Of course there is. But I want to ask you, that knowing when to do that, to onboard the player and knowing like, okay, I've got them now. I think they know that I'm keep on moving. There's only two controls, and this charging thing, this dash mechanic seems to be the cornerstone of the controls. Awesome. I got this. How hard can, oh God.
New challenge.
Yeah. How have you found dealing with that? Like making sure that they're gently onboarded.
Yeah. So this one was interesting because we really started with Quamp One as like the blueprint. So we looked at Quamp One. We really observed that like, okay, you know, every level they throw something new at the player, which starts a little challenging, but then, you know, they learn to overcome it. And that kind of behavior might, you know, reappear, even if it's not like the same kind of thing. Like you're introduced to things that can move horizontally. And then maybe in the next level, it's something that moves horizontally that, you know, can kill you kind of a thing. So that was kind of molded from the first one. And in terms of implementation, I wrote the design Bible, and the goal was kind of to think about like the different tracks of difficulty that players might find themselves on. And we kind of used like death benchmarks to kind of determine like on a per room basis, like how things were feeling in that like linear order. And, you know, in terms of those tracks, we had like, you know, a standard player, someone who's just playing, they're not really out to collect everything, to get anything. We have speedrunners, which might be a big part of this game, you know, because it has that speed element. And that's like its own layer of challenge because, you know, a normal solution might take a while, but like for a speedrunner, that's not great. So they gotta kind of, you know, risk it a little bit more to get out of there faster. Then there's those, you know, looking for collectibles and secret exits, which we do have. But yeah, we designed rooms and some of them are like, okay, this one, not hard for a normal player, but we purposely made sure the speedrunner is going to choke up here, you know? So we kind of thought about all those lanes per room.
Yeah. And this is something that I think is kind of some design thinking at Graphite that's been kind of preceded a little bit by Mr. Run and Jump. And then before that with Combinera, where we want to make games that, you know, make you think, and they never seem really all that unfair, but they also are never going to hand you the blue ribbon just because. So you always have to work for it. And we learned about kind of how our players connect with that difficulty in Combinera. We refined that in Run and Jump, and Quamp really is kind of, I think, a balance of those two strategies where, you know, we want to onboard them comfortably and over time, and throughout all of it need to make sure that if they ever do face, you know, a game over, that it doesn't feel unfair, that it's like, okay, I think I got something else I can try here. And so you'll see little bits of that personality in our previous two games with Atari, but I think it's really displayed well in Quamp 2 because of the work Brad and the rest of the team did.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to delve into the sense of clarity later, but I just want to ask, next point is really about frustration. Now, puzzle arcade games can suffer from that. I can have the player bouncing off of them just because, like, I can't do this. My hand-to-eye coordination isn't up to it, that kind of thing. Now, what's the extraordinary thing about Quamp 2 is it's actually quite forgiving if you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's very clever. Sure. I just wanted to ask you how you managed to design that and bake that into Quamp 2, this sense of one more turn. Apart from the obvious, which is what I call the Super Meat Boy mode of you die, you reappear almost instantaneously. That's transparent. That's quite basic. No offense, but it's true. So it's an obvious answer to this question. But what you've done here with Quamp 2, and I'll let you expand further, but from my point of view, is a sense of agency, a sense of control that every error is your fault. But I want you to expand on that. What did you do to make it so that it isn't so punishing that it's like, oh, this is beyond my skill ceiling, I can't carry on? What have you done to prevent the frustration on the part of the player?
Yeah, so I think a big part of like frustration in games where you like lose, it's kind of that feeling of like, oh, you know, I gotta wait for a loading screen, I have to start over somewhere else, and you know, maybe I have lives. And in Quamp, we make sure like if you die, you can start over, you know, really as quick as possible. So I think that kind of helps with the motivation. And kind of like what I said before, you know, we have the difficulty tracks. And for the normal player, we were very, very careful, you know. So we would constantly replay rooms and we would look at the death benchmark. And, you know, we had a variety of players do it. And if someone was like, you know, hey, I'm dying three times in this room, I would go back and make it easier, you know? So I would kind of smooth out a lot of those rough edges. And of course, it doesn't always apply to every player, you know, as much testing as we can do, it could come out and we could have, you know, a group of players who are like, this is really hard. And for that, we have accessibility options as well. So we allow you to pause and turn on invincibility wherever you want. So that's something we offer. And this one's a little spoiler, but I'll tease it a little bit. But, you know, when you struggle in real life, you run into situations where people want to help you, right? People appear randomly. And I'll just say that in Quomp 2, maybe that kind of thing can happen as well. So yeah. Keep an eye out for that.
Keep an eye out for that, everyone. Thanks, Brad, for being so, you know, dancing around that, because we don't do spoilers on this show. That's for Kane and Rince. This is Sausage Factory. We talk about how games are made, not what they are. If you want that, Kane and Rince, it's go for that. So it's which I also host on, by the way, everyone. but no, it's yeah, very well put, and it does a great job of encouraging the player. Go, you can do this. We believe in you. And also, yeah. You talk about playtesting earlier. I personally discovered Quomp 2 at PAX West last year, and I'm sure data and feedback from that helped you, because it's what, 6-7 months ago now, at the time of recording this show. So
yeah,
hopefully,
yeah. We've continued to, you know, take feedback, and it's always something I'm attentive to. You know, even if I don't agree with it, even if it's like, you know, if I'm like, oh, they're way off, this is easy, I still kind of evaluate and look at it, and it's possible, like, you know, when they say that, maybe the problem's something else. You know, they might say like, this obstacle is really hard, but oh no, it's not the obstacle. You know, maybe you don't have enough room to get to the obstacle, you know? So it's kind of gets the brain thinking, no matter what the feedback really is.
Yeah. Right then. Last question. And this is something I can't ignore, because I'm a bit of a retro game fan myself, although I don't really recognize retro. Classic games. Big fan of classic games. Games that are older than a few years old, we say a few decades old. And there's like this curved monitor kind of CRT presentation to Quomp 2. Low palette, we say. And we featured a fair few low colour palettes games recently. Heretic's Fork being the most recent. Domekeeper is another one. These are games that have a lot of animation. A lot of animation, but barely any colours in them at all. And, yeah. You know, Quomp 2 revels in that, at least initially. But I just want to ask, this presentation style, how has it influenced the design of the levels and experience? Because I'm sure it has.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the way we do the effect, you know, it's kind of done through like post-processing. So in terms of like designing, of course, we had it nice and flat. We didn't have to worry about like the curve, you know, for placing our tiles and whatnot. But while we were designing it, you know, we offer the option in the game to turn the effect off. So we had to kind of take it into special consideration with the zoom level of our different rooms. So the camera, you know, what might look good in the, I'm going to call it the bulge view. That's kind of what we've been referring it to. But, you know, when that's enabled, it might be one thing and it looks great, you know, that way. But if you turn off the bulge, you know, sometimes it's too close and then you can't see things and they go off screen. So we really had to kind of account manually for the different values and zoom levels, you know, for the two versions of our camera.
And I mean, with this minimal style as well, when you do see things that break that style, for example, when the ball starts to dash, it gets a color applied to it. They really stand out much more. As an artist by trade, I got my start in the industry as an artist. Like, when you can make these bold art decisions, it's really satisfying as a developer. And some of that we owe, in fact, a lot of it we owe to Stuff Wombat and the original Quomp team, who established the style, and then we got to kind of carry it forward. So a lot of respect for what they pioneered, and then really a lot of pleasure on our part to kind of carry that torch forward.
Yeah. There's actually a technology I recently discovered where people are using modern devices on CRTs. Yeah. It's like why? But no, then,
I did that with my PS3 before I had an HDTV, and it did not look good. It hurt my eyes.
No. They're kind of like descalers or something. They're unscalers. They demake. Or they make the... Yeah, very... anyway. Yeah, there's some crazy stuff out there. Anyway, so Quamp 2, fantastic game, everyone. It's been developed by a Graphite Lab and published by Tari. And could you tell us, what platforms is it available on?
Sure. So it's available on every... I'm not going to say everything, because then people will be like, oh, Dreamcast. No, every modern platform. So PC, PlayStation 4, 5, Xbox Series, so S and X, Switch, and also the VCS.
Right, of course. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's on all of the things, everyone. All of the
things. Yes, no Dreamcast, sorry.
No, I do actually have one still hooked up behind me, but I it could run. It could probably, might not.
Maybe. If Atari wants it, I'm sure we can do it.
Get a little Sega Atari collab going.
Anyway, it's been wonderful having you both on the show. You've been very open and honest about the creation of Quamp 2. And just to be clear, everyone, it's the spelling is Q-O-M-P. It's not Quop. That's no, very different game. That's the game with the strange ant man that you're using with 20 different keys. No, it's not that. This is a very different experience. It involves a ball that you're trying to control because it's doing its own thing. And yeah, thanks again very much for being on the show. And we wish you the very best of luck with Comp 2.
Thank you, and thank you for having us.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, that was great. Who knew that Nier would lead to the creation of Quamp 2? Huh? It's certainly a journey, but we got there. We certainly did. So thank you, Matthew and Brad. Great interview. Next episode is episode 486. And no, we're not going to be featuring a certain microprocessor from Intel. No, we're going to be talking about a deck builder instead. It's called Acolyte of the Altar. It's a beautifully rendered game and really, really well designed. Of course it is. That's why it's on the Sausage Factory. I'm going to be talking to Cameron Reed of Black Kite Games all about it. So please do tune in then. So until then, bye.
You have been listening to the Sausage Factory podcast, part of the Kane and Rince Collective. Support us for just $2 per month at patreon.com/Kane and Rince for early, extended, and exclusive podcasts. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, YouTube, and at our website, kaneandrince.com.